What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Phillies Today. Good to be back with you here on a Friday morning, as always. But no pod last week. Apologies for that. I was actually in Boston, went to Fenway for the first time last week. So I was in Boston from Thursday through the weekend, visiting my college friend, my first time, like I said, at Fenway. Great time, great vibes up there. You know, despite watching Aaron Nola get completely shelled that Thursday against a very mediocre Red Sox lineup, but it was my first time at Fenway, and it was really cool. And to anyone who hasn't been there, immediately I walked in, and I would describe it as the Palestra, but for baseball. It's just a museum that is also a stadium. You have the old seats, the poles in the grandstand, and immediately it just felt like the Palestra to me as soon as I walked in. So that was my quick takeaway. Great ballpark. Again, if you haven't been, definitely worth the trip up there. I was expecting to call it overrated, but I thought it was a really cool ballpark, and I had a good time up there. So, a lot to get to Phils-wise today. They take 2 of 3 from the Padres to start the homestand. Finally, they have a day off yesterday after coming back from London, followed by 2 road series that didn't have an off day in between, which, again, I think Major League Baseball, as much of a success as I think the London series was, I think Major League Baseball totally, you know, screwed the Phillies kind of by giving them 2 straight road series where they didn't have an off day in between them. It just felt kind of weird, and I don't know. I thought that, and I'll get more into it as the pod goes along, but the pitching staff really was kind of punished by this, and it led to some rough outings, as I mentioned, for Nola and for Wheeler as well, and I'll get to it, like I said, a little later in the pod. But yeah, it was just an odd kind of sequence of scheduling by Major League Baseball. So, that was pretty weird. But their NL East lead is down to 7. I'm not too concerned about it yet, but Atlanta definitely starting to figure some things out offensively and with their pitching staff as well after they just sweep the Tigers. So we'll get into all that. Give you a preview of the Diamondback series this weekend. The first time they come to Citizens Bank Park since that, you know, lovely, less than memorable game 6 and 7 of the NLCS last season. So that should be a good series for sure. But first thing I want to start off with, though, is this lineup right now. Because, you know, we know about the runners in scoring position issue right now, which I think is just a stretch, and they're going to get through it. It happens to every team, you know, at least a couple times a season. But despite that, there are a couple guys who are just tearing the cover off the baseball right now. And who else to start with than Mr. June himself, Kyle Schwarber? Schwarber in June. Like, I feel like it's a casual thing to talk about, but you can't not talk about it. It's the most incredible bit I've ever seen, because there is part of, like I just said, there's part of me for the last 3 seasons where I've been like, okay, the June thing, is it real or is it just a coincidence? And he just starts, you know, hitting for power and really gets going when the weather warms up. But here he is again. And he didn't have a bad first couple months, but just having an absurd month of June. He's hitting .290, 6 homers, OPS north of 1,000 in 16 games so far. And now for the season, he's up to .254, which is also pretty absurd. 17 bombs in there as well. And now in his 69 games played, in the month of June since coming to the Phillies in 2022, he's hitting .257, 26 homers. And this is in 69 games, remember. .257, 26 homers, 56 RBI, 56 runs scored, and an OPS at .973. And when you look at some of the numbers, like the home runs per at-bat for his career in June, he's just up there with some ridiculous names. And I think it's like him and Babe Ruth setting the pace for home runs per at-bat in the month of June. So he's like statistically the greatest player ever in the month of June, which is just insane. But hey, he's still patient at the plate as well. He leads the National Leagues in walks with 54, 7th in on-base percentage. And it seems like the leadoff hitter chatter has finally kind of just died, which makes my heart happy, because as a Kyle Schwarber appreciator and as someone who I think he should be leading off, and this team has done so well when he's been in the leadoff spot, I wanted him to stay there, and I'm glad that, you know, he's paying dividends for Rob Thompson, who kind of believed in him to be that guy that can be an unconventional leadoff hitter, even though he is taking his singles this year, that's for sure. But yes, the great stuff from Schwarber. He's just been absolutely amazing for this team, and you start to wonder, does a Kyle Schwarber extension happen somewhat in the near future? Like, I heard James and Jack talking about it on their High Hopes podcast, but next year is his last year under contract. And to me, he's a guy who's not going to age terribly for a power hitter. He's a pretty smooth swing. He's actually held up pretty well over the past few years injury-wise, and I just think that more than any of that, he is the voice of that clubhouse. And, you know, as much of a leader as Bryce Harper is, as much of a leader as JT is and some of these other guys, I think Kyle Schwarber is kind of the voice in the clubhouse. And I know he's the voice in the clubhouse. And he's also never missed the playoffs in his career, which is just insane to think about with the Cubs, with the Red Sox, and now with the Phils. That means something. And the fact that he's been on so many good teams and has won a World Series and has seen it all, I just really am very happy he's on my baseball team. And, if he keeps putting up the numbers he's putting up so far this year, he's going to be top five, top 10 for that MVP conversation as well. So I think Kyle Schwarber has been unbelievable in the month of June again and is kind of maybe on pace to have one of his best seasons as a Philly, despite, you know, maybe the homer numbers not being as strong as they were. He's hitting the ball, he's getting walked, he's doing all the things that you would want him to do. So great stuff from Schwarber there. Also great stuff from another MVP candidate, a guy that's probably top two in the MVP race right now, and that's Bryce Harper, who has somewhat, you know, quietly launched himself into that race. I believe his odds are second right now to Shohei Ohtani. And, you know, especially with Mookie going down with the fractured hand, he's going to have a shot at number three, his third MVP for sure. Again, Vegas has him and Ohtani pretty close as the 1-2. And then there's a pretty big gap in between those guys. And I think maybe Ozuna's probably the next. And he's put up some good offensive numbers this year. Besides them, I'm not really sure who's competing at this point. Him and Schwarber tied for the team lead with 17 homers, which is also fourth in the National League. Bryce is eighth in average in the National League, third in OPS, fourth in on base, third in slug, fifth in WRC+, third in OPS+. So he's right there among the top guys in all those categories. And I think the thing that might get him over the top, aside from potentially being on the team with the best record in the National League, is the whole fielding thing. Aside from Christian Walker, Bryce is the best defensive first baseman in the National League this year. Like, it's kind of undisputable. He's second to Walker in outs above average with six. He's also second to Walker in defensive run saves with three. So this is an elite defender we're watching here, and all the metrics will support that. Plus, the other two guys who I mentioned that are possibilities for the MVP race, Shohei Ohtani, DH, Marcell Ozuna, DH. So he's the only guy that's playing both sides here. And so Bryce is just doing Bryce things, and it still feels like, and I know I always mention this when I talk about Bryce on this podcast, it feels like he hasn't gone on that true 2 to 3 week Bryce patented heater yet, where he just goes yard every single day. So I'm greatly looking forward to that, but he's been really good so far this season as he looks for MVP number three in his career. And the top of this lineup has actually been really good. I know, again, the runners in scoring position thing is annoying. I think that's just kind of an anomaly, and you're going to see this team start to hit more with runners in scoring position. I think missing JT is certainly part of that, but I think the top of the lineup has been pretty good, and I expect this to get even better with Trey Turner back in the lineup now. I feel like Trey's at-bats have been pretty solid since he's gotten back. He's definitely not running at 100% yet, which seems like it's, you know, intentional on his part and the Phillies' part. So I assume that his sprint speed will look more Trey-esque as he continues to recover here and just get more comfortable, get his legs under him. But meanwhile, the Boehm resurgence, the Alec Boehm resurgence, has been an absolute joy to watch, because I'm going to be honest here. Always honest on Phillies Today. Always honest. I've kind of always had my doubts with Alec Boehm, even through the good times, just because I'm never really sure if he'll ever develop into the power bat that I thought he once would when the Phils took him in the first round and with the third pick and he was coming up. But his ability to hit with runners in scoring position and runners on is just undeniable at this point. And through almost a half a season, he's second in the National League in RBI, first in doubles, seventh in hits, fourth in extra base hits, and he's going to pretty easily be the starting third baseman in the All-Star game this year. So he's getting it done, and man, he's having a pretty special season. And the fact that he went through that brutal stretch in late May to early June when he's really struggling to find himself at the plate, and this is what his numbers look like, a .306 average with 60 RBI and an .840 OPS. It's pretty damn impressive, and it's a big reason why this team is as good as they are right now. So great stuff from Boehm. It really is nice that he was able to bounce back, because once he kind of fell back into his struggles, I was thinking to myself, okay, he had the really good two-month start to begin the season. Does he regress kind of back into what, you know, he's been at times in his career, which has been, you know, a streaky hitter and I'm very glad that he has bounced back and has kind of re-entered himself into, I guess, the all-star starter role here. And there have been some really big-time struggles from some of the other third basemen in the National League, which has helped for sure. Austin Riley's had a rough year. Machado hasn't had the year we're typically used to. Arenado has kind of fallen off the last couple of years. But it's going to be cool to see Alec Bohm start in the All-Star game, and he's leading the votes by a good margin. So he should be pretty much locked up to start that All-Star game. On the other hand, their other young guy in the daycare, Bryson Stott, definitely going through a little tough stretch here right now. And it's tough to watch because, and it's funny, again, if you asked me before the season who was going to be a starter in the All-Star game, Alec Bohm or Bryson Stott, I would have pretty comfortably chosen Bryson Stott. And this isn't to say that I think he took a step back, but we saw him take a major, major leap last year. And I think a lot of people, myself included, just expected him to kind of keep up that progression in a sort of way where, you know, here, Tyrese Maxey did for the Sixers last season, for lack of a better comparison. I thought Tyrese in the 2022-23 season took a pretty major leap from where he was the year before. And then this year, he built upon that leap and was even better and got to be an all-star and just kind of took that next step. I was expecting that type of thing for Bryson this year, but it just hasn't really happened yet. And I think Stott's going to be an incredible player, but it seems like some of the adjustments that he made to try to get himself walking more and seeing more pitches, it's kind of messed with his swing and his approach a little bit. And it just feels like he has no rhythm up there right now, the way he did last year when he was so good, especially behind the count with two strikes. The walks are definitely up, which is a good thing. But I have to think at some point, him, Kevin Long, and Rob Thompson have to figure out if this specific approach that he's picked up here is most beneficial for him, because you'd like him to be producing more towards the way he did last year, even if he is walking less. So I appreciate the concerted effort to incorporate getting on base more in his approach. But to me, he was just such a good hitter and was kind of developing into one of those special bat to ball guys. And he still is. His metrics in terms of K rate, strikeout rate, chase rate, they're all still pretty good. So I think he's going to pick it up here as the season goes along. But it has been tough to watch because he's been struggling, no doubt about it. And it's been a good month and a half to 2 months here. He's hitting under 240. So you'd like those numbers to come up for sure. And hopefully they can as we get into the summer here. So another week of me trying to figure out Nick Castellanos, as if I ever will. Just when you've about had it with him and he goes 0 for 17 or 18, whatever that was during that stretch of Baltimore, he gets on a little run like he did in the San Diego series, highlighted by that four-hit night on Tuesday with the walk-off to cap it off. But he's just, you never really know what to expect from him besides swinging it, the first pitch or two every at-bat. But if you could just get him in a place to where he's just hitting the ball hard and you'll take a swing and miss, I'm fine with that. Just hit the ball hard and just work some at-bats past the first couple pitches. Like, it is really funny when you watch him taking at-bat up there and you just know he's swinging at that first pitch. Whether he hits it or not, he's up there swinging. So that is where I'm at with Nick Castellanos. I just will never, until he finishes his contract here, or until he's not here anymore, be able to get a pulse on how he's seeing the ball at the plate. So, but speaking of Nick Castellanos, and I will say that with his struggles and Rojas being sent down, which I'm totally fine with, by the way, they didn't want to let go of Dollar Pache before the deadline because, they don't have another outfielder yet. They just don't want to let him go. So I'm fine with that. And, he went 4-for-4 last night in Lehigh Valley. So he'll be back up. He'll be fine. Just, has to get himself together down there. Brandon Marsh struggling against lefties too. It has become apparent that an outfield bat will likely be the priority for this team at the deadline. And I think if you have a chance to get Luis Robert, which the Phillies, it seems, have been pretty connected to, I think you should be willing to offer pretty much anything aside from Andrew Painter and Adam Miller. I really like Robert. When you talk about stereotypical five-tool guy who is strong, fast, really talented hitter, hits for power, he's that guy. But he's just been rotting away in that organization, and now he's had health issues as well. I think he's had like 100 at-bats. Like, he has not had a lot of at-bats this year. That's a part of it, but he's just been, you know, playing for that organization, which has just been so bad over the past, you know, 5 or so years. And, you know, now the White Sox have said they want a Juan Soto type package for Robert. And to that, I'd say they're insane, considering Soto's probably a top three hitter in baseball, and the Nationals actually got a pretty awesome haul in return for Soto. They got James Wood, who is like the top prospect in baseball right now, CJ Abrams, who is their shortstop of the future, who's played really well this year, and Mackenzie Gore, who's been like a really solid starter for them. So they got a ton for that. I would not be one to give up a package anywhere near that. So that's a lot to ask for, considering that the Phillies will, you know, still be on the hook to give Robert a contract as well in the next couple of years. So if it is going to be Painter or Miller they ask for, I'm going to pass on that. The only guy I think I'd be willing to listen on for either of those guys is going to be Kyle Tucker. And I don't think Houston is necessarily going to be selling, considering they're only 6 games out of a wild card spot in the American League right now. So it feels like the names that will most likely be out there outfield-wise the Phillies could get and could possibly bring in are like, you know, Taylor Ward from the Angels, Tyler O'Neill, Brent Rooker, those type of guys. And I think it's probably going to be a right-handed bat. I wouldn't be shocked if they got one of those guys and they let, you know, Pache go at the deadline, because I expect Dahl gets sent back down once Cody Clemens is back healthy from the back spasms. And then Pache is kind of the guy on the hook there. Maybe they, you know, send Rojas back down, but I don't think they will, because I think Rojas will be on this team during September and during the playoff run. But it'll be interesting to kind of monitor, because it's been pretty apparent with, you know, these baseball writers and reporters, they're saying that the Phillies' priority is probably going to be an outfield bat at the deadline. So that is where I'm at on that. And it feels like, because like, if you can get a right-handed hitter here, you have a nice little platoon for Martian left, who has struggled against lefties this year, and you can just be a bit more flexible against the left-handed pitching, which they faced a lot this year. And it feels like there are more left-handed pitchers in the league than ever. So shifting gears for a little here, I wanted to talk about the pitching staff and how they've looked recently. Again, I mentioned at the top, I think London had a lot to do with it, but it felt like they were sort of out of rhythm for the first time this year. I guess that's what happens when, you know, you give a team a bunch of days in between games and have them play in London, then come back, play 2 road series, but, you know, whatever. Weird scheduling on Major League Baseball's part. They come back, Nola gives up an 8 spot in Boston, Wheeler gives up an 8 spot against the Orioles, and I will pretty much fully blame that on the routines being thrown off by the London series. And we'll see if they can bounce back this weekend, but I'm just not putting too much stock into those starts. Ranger, I thought, was solid in the loss on Wednesday. It was pretty cool that his family was able to come from Venezuela to watch him pitch for the first time. Again, dude, his son looks exactly like him. I saw that picture. I was like, wow, that's literally a mini Ranger right there. So that was cool to see his wife and kids finally coming off from Venezuela to watch him pitch. And with Wheeler getting roughed up in Baltimore, I think Ranger is now the betting favorite for the Cy Young Award, which would be pretty cool to see him win. And as annoying as some of these injuries have been for the Phillies as of late, you know, the Trey thing, the Marsh thing, obviously now the JT thing, Clemens, they really dodged a bullet a few weeks ago when Ranger got hit in the hand with that line drive. He's been so fun to watch pitch this year. And the conversation in October is going to be, and we'll talk about this later, who's going to start game two of their first playoff series, Nola or Ranger? You know, Wheeler's going to get the ball in game one. I think that's pretty undisputable at this point. But could you imagine if Ranger won the Cy Young and didn't start until game three of their first playoff series? Like, it'll be a debate when the time comes. So I find that interesting, and I go back and forth with some buddies about it. So that'll be an interesting topic when that time comes. Also on the trade front, I know people are talking about grabbing another reliever at the deadline. I think that's fine. You can't have too many arms in a bullpen or in a playoff bullpen ever, but I'm not giving up anything of real significance to get a high-end reliever, I'd say. I think you maybe go out and get another arm just to kind of solidify things, although Sir Anthony, has he given up an earned run in over a month? Just saying. And Kirk Green looks good, too. The guy you're probably looking to replace in that bullpen, I would say, is Soto. But how many big games is Soto really going to have to pitch during the postseason with Stram and Alvarado as your, you know, high-leverage lefty option? So I think they're really complete there. They have a top-5 bullpen in baseball, I'd probably say. But if they went out and got an arm, I wouldn't be mad either. I'm probably just not expecting it to be one of the top guys in the market like Mason Miller or Ryan Helsley, though, because I just think they're pretty solidify in that area. I know that they don't have a full-time closer, but I am always going to be one of the ones that are convinced that the Jeff Hoffman, Alvarado, righty, lefty, however you want to match it up, platoon is fine. And I think that they're both really solid high leverage guys, and they'll be able to get the job done. So before we get out of here, I want to preview this weekend's series against the Diamondbacks. Again, first time they played since the NLCS last season. Tonight is also Cole Hamels' retirement night. I'll be at the ballpark, so very excited for that. I'm sure a ton of 08 guys will be in the house. It'll be cool to see. Also, really funny side note, David Dahl was number 35, and people on the radio and everywhere kind of talked about how, well, why are they giving out number 35 to just guys who just got on the team? And he changed his number. He's no longer number 35. He changed it to 31. And he said he did to honor Cole, which is pretty cool. But again, it's just odd they keep giving that number out to every borderline major leaguer that comes up and plays at the Phillies. So he is now number 31. In the number 35 club after Cole Hamels, you got some good names. David Dahl, Drew Ellis, and Oscar Mercado in there as well. Just some absolute legends on that list. But anyway, Cole Hamels in the house tonight. It'll be another packed house, so it should be a good atmosphere. Ceremonies are supposed to start at 6:25, so if you're heading down to the ballpark, get to your seat early. And I know it's an Apple TV game tonight, but I'm pretty sure they'll be showing it on there as well as the NBC Sports feed too. And remember, you can always flip to Fransky in LA on the Apple TV broadcast as well, considering they have that option where you can switch it to the radio broadcast, which I think is pretty cool. So flip to Fransky in LA. They'll be great. And I think it's T-Mac on the Apple broadcast as well. So there'll be plenty of Philly there. But again, I always love switching to the Fransky in LA feature. They sync it up for you. So they do it really easy there. And you just got to go, I think, scroll down on the page where the Phillies game is at. So anyway, the Phils will have Taijuan Walker on the mound tonight, coming off what was actually a pretty decent start in Baltimore, where he went 5 2/3, gave up 3 runs, and lost to the Orioles. Starting to figure some stuff out command-wise, but he even said, post-game he had a good feel for everything but the split. And so if he can get that pitch together, which, again, is supposed to be his money pitch, then maybe he can get going here. But we'll see if he can keep progressing tonight. He'll be facing former future Philly, Jordan Montgomery, who has not had a good year, to say the least, after signing a 1 year with Arizona. 6 ERA, 1.63 whip, not striking a lot of guys out, more walks than he's ever given up. And man, did the front office, Dave Dombrowski, make a good decision by not picking him up this offseason? He's gotten booed in Arizona, where people barely care. So I'm imagining things would not have gone well if he was doing that for the Phils. So that is your matchup for tonight. Then on Saturday, you have a 4:05 start with Zach Wheeler looking to bounce back in his from his last outing. I guess another guy with an ERA over 6 and Tommy Henry. And Sunday, get the coffee on once again for an early game. Chris Sanchez going up against Slade Ciccone. Great name, by the way. At 11:35 a.m. on Roku. And great outing by Chris Sanchez this past week against the Padres, bouncing back from a tough start the start before. So I was glad that he was able to kind of officially kind of put any doubt to bed, because it always seems like people are trying to find a reason for him not to sustain the success that he's had. The changeup we know is great. The sinker velocity's up, and add that slider, and he's had a really nice pitch mix this year. So hopefully he keeps that up. And that is going to do it for this edition of Phillies Today. I want to thank everyone, as always, for tuning in. I will be back next week, where hopefully I can talk about the Phils regain a little ground lost in the NL East. So with that, for Phillies 24/7, this has been Justin Morgenstein, and have a good weekend, everybody. See ya.